Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. He's speaking to us from South Florida. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks much for inviting me on, Jim. Appreciate the opportunity to connect with your guys.
In the past year, they talked about the Magnificent Seven. It was trimmed down to the Magnificent Three, or the Marvelous Three. Now, you say it's almost like there's only one stock at a time.
Yeah, I refer to the Magnificent Seven, by the way, as the lunatic sector. And there's less lunaticking going on. Basically, you got all these guys who came through Wharton School, and they're white-collar thieves, and they manipulate the markets. And you can see the themes at work. Sometimes it's really apparent, you know, let's buy the airlines and we'll sell the banks or whatever. But I would say that, the most negative thing we hear about the market is that pretty much the entire advance in the S&Ps over the last year was really mostly in five stocks or whatever. So the market, the breadth, the leadership is really, it's so narrow, it's insane. But it's narrowed even more because instead of taking a whole loony bin sector up, manipulating the lunatic stocks, generally on short squeezes where it doesn't take much volume. All you do is sort of pop it into short covering on the opening bar, and you can levitate a $2 or $3 trillion stock by, as you know, $5, $10 with no buying taking place in that gap. So it's not like the thieves have big expenses really to get these stocks up, but even so, they're narrowing their focus even more, so that yesterday, instead of popping the whole lunatic sector, they said, hey, let's key in on Amazon, you know, which is what they did. Amazon was big stock yesterday. It just kept going up and up and up and up and up and up, and that was it. So they're not even ambitious anymore in the sense of let's take the whole lunatic sector up. They're let's say mustering limited firepower to achieve these short squeezes with fewer stocks.
Now, AI mania, you know, sweeping the market. Is this like the dot-com bust of 2000, where you just put the words dot-com on your company? Now you add AI?
Well, every mania has to have a theme. And I think the bankers are probably thanking their lucky stars that they didn't have to continue with the fraudulent Bitcoin theme to carry this whole bull move. They at least attached it to something that's not like a total hoax, the tech sector and AI. And so every mania has to sort of attach itself to some idea that can be sold pretty easily to the rubes. So AI, it's been a pretty easy sale, even though most rubes, including myself, we don't see it. We don't really see AI as being anything but just something that companies will use to eliminate yet more jobs and make it even more difficult for us to have human interaction in any, no matter what business we're dealing with. They don't want to talk with us. They'll let their robot, their bot menu talk to us. So AI has been the big theme, and you know, it can't do Duke really. It's I don't see it doing anything impressive, even in the graphic area where you can say, hey, draw me an animated cartoon with the example would be a mermaid typing Hamlet on the bottom of the sea, and it'll draw you some beautiful pictures with mermaids and a shell decorated bottom of the sea. But so what? You know, I mean, it's sure as heck not going to paint you a Gainsborough, much less a Da Vinci. You know, so we're really all in this AI. And by the way, Rick's Picks is having, we've just done some evolutionary work, and I'm now using AI in my forecast. If anybody wants to try our free 2-week trial. But all right, so AI is all things to all people. That's the theme you get going during stock market manias. And it parallels NVIDIA is sort of the hardware leader of the AI mania. And for good reason. They've really been there for the next big thing each time the next big thing was happening, whether it was gaming boards or, you know, Bitcoin, you know, computational power or whatever, or now AI. So NVIDIA has been a brilliant performer there. They've just been a step ahead of everything. All right, so we've recently had Apple seize on the theme. You know, Apple came up to this date where it was going to have to announce AI something, and it did. It basically announced, oh, we're pairing with ChatGPT. They latched on to some other AI player, but they don't really have anything to offer of their own. They can't hold this big dog and pony show and say, check this out, watch what AI does. So because they don't have an AI idea in their head, they're just sort of casting about looking for something, anything that'll give Apple an AI story. So here we are in AI city, and there's no company that exists that wants its stock to move that's not on the bandwagon.
Apple laid off 600 people who were working on their self-driving car. Is the self-driving car a dream that's going to have to wait?
Forever. Yeah, I mean, Apple wasn't smart enough when GM decided a few years ago to take a $5 billion hit and get out of it. Apple should have seen the handwriting on the wall, because they're definitely not GM, they're not Elon Musk. They're just a company without a clue that thinks it could get some mileage by taking the flavor of the month and saying, yeah, we're going to get into driverless cars. But I have a lot of respect for Musk. You know, he can get a rocket ship to Mars, as far as I know. But the driverless car is a whole other challenge, and I don't even think Musk is going to get there. And it'll work fine, but for the fact of the chicken or the egg thing. You know, if all cars were driverless, it would be great. You know, the trucks would get in some single line, and they'd be moving at 70 miles an hour, 4 inches apart, and everything would work just great. Of course, until one of them had some sort of accident, but we don't have that, and we've got a fleet of cars. It's anything but AI. And you tell me, how long will it take to put the mean price of a car, or no, the average price is, it's got to be close to 50 grand, right? So how many years is it going to take before we all, like, send our 50-year-old car, before we send our $50,000 car to the junkyard? So just on the replacement cycle alone, we've got 20 or 30 years at least before the path is cleared for all driverless car, you know, an old driverless car environment. So I don't understand, really. You know, Google has sort of backed away from promoting itself with all these cars that drive around with the cameras and the cab fleets and everything else, but nothing has been a resounding success in a driverless car area, except for maybe for a little while, like stretches of 2 or 3 hours on some of the streets of San Francisco. until one of the driverless cars gets stuck in the middle of an intersection. I'm coming round about here, but Apple's move out of driverless cars should have happened 2 years. Should have never happened. They should have never gotten into it, because you know all they're capable of innovating right now is a slightly improved iPhone camera.
Now, for electric vehicles, the U.S. is going to put a 100% tariff on Chinese electric cars. The big reason being is they're affordable. Volkswagen is making a model called the Viking in China that's $10,000. That would get people into electric cars if that's the government's goal. Yet, apparently, if it's not made in America for $70,000 to $100,000, it's not worth driving.
Yeah, but just watch this battery story. It's already taken such a whack out of the EV story that we're never going to get there either. I mean, it's one thing to talk about driverless cars not getting there ever, but there's the EV car right now is scaling Mount Kilimanjaro, because you've got to kick it off. Last winter, you had the Chicago EVs stuck in snow. It takes longer to charge them. You use more power more quickly because you got the heat going full blast and all that. And you're waiting. You're waiting for hours to get a recharge at some station. So that was the first blow. But now we've had the EV story about how the fleet, like I think it was Hertz selling off its EV fleet and essentially bringing the cost of the used Tesla down to $25,000. That's it, because that's where Hertz is blowing out its fleet. Why? Because the maintenance cycle doesn't work. And not only that, but the collision damage thing doesn't work either. We don't have mechanics trained to work on Teslas if the battery tray gets damaged. There's a fire hazard there, and there's just the pure technological hazard of how do you fix a battery system for a Tesla that's been partially damaged. So the insurance companies are totaling out these cars, even though there may be a slightly wrong, just something a little bit wrong with the battery, and certainly from a collision there will be something wrong with it. And you've got a very small group of mechanics from Ukraine who've come to the U.S. because, yeah, they figured out their jerry-rig way of fixing a broken Tesla battery. And it's only the Russians, the Ukrainians, that will risk getting immolated in some fire, which is another EV story that's starting to get traction now. You know, it turns out that when an EV, when a lithium battery catches fire, you really can't put it out. It takes huge amounts of water, and of course, not every garage, service garage, or lithium big lithium battery user is going to have a liquid nitrogen extinguisher system. So, and this applies. The fires apply not only to the cars, which is why you would see these Teslas flaming on a roadside with no fire trucks around, or they'd just be watching, because it's not a 1,000-degree house fire, it's a 5,000-degree acetylene torch fire. So you get really hot flames, and it happens not just to the cars, but it happens to plants that manufacture, you know, lithium-based batteries. So this stuff is just piling up against EVs. But if you don't like the fire stories or the insurance damage stories or any of those, just take the disposal story. What are we going to do with a billion spent Tesla batteries? And nobody's really got a good answer for that. So like so many other big systems that come along and there's all the hype, most of us are still sort of swamped by the hype. I think people, well, I would say to give them credit, they've realized that there's problems with the EV and they're just not buying as many of them. So for the U.S. to be slapping 100% tariff on a car manufactured very efficiently without the usual U.S. subsidies, that's crazy. I mean, You know that whatever tariffs we levy, we're paying for it. We're basically saying, yeah, we're willing to pay a little bit more to shut Chinese vehicles out. But don't kid yourself that you're getting some sort of deal. It's going to make cars more expensive. So Trump can do that. He did it. He was an activist tariff guy. And I think he did it where, well, to my taste, he was doing it in the right places. You know, let's sock it to the French with their cheese and sock it to the Japanese or Koreans with the steel and this and that. But autos it's just a big, big industry. And when you start slapping 100% tariffs on anything as big as autos, where the market globally is fungible, you know, anybody could be producing these things anywhere, we're just looking for trouble. You know, and here Musk wants to lower the price of Teslas, and we're putting a tariff in place that will give everybody sort of an open pathway to raising the prices. So we're going to see a collision between those incentives.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, President Trump has suggested income tax should be replaced by tariffs. Is that a good idea?
I haven't really thought that through, you know, like when Bill Gates said we should tax robots, my initial reaction was, ain't that just like Gates, you know? I mean, all he wants to do is be the only one standing when the rest of us die of starvation and he owns all the farmland. So my instinctual reaction to anything Gates says is, let's see, how's he trying to kill us all with that idea? But as far as tariffs replacing... So Gates said, let's tax robots, and it winds up being a good idea. I mean, if robots are going to put us all out of business, and the businesses that use those robots to essentially destroy labor are going to make money from that, then they should have to pay for it. So I'm not exactly a trade unionist, but in this instance, I think Gates is on the right track. All right, so to go on a tariffs for everything to replace taxes, the revenuers are not going to like that at all, because even if it's a good idea somehow down the road, if you can sort of Rube Goldberg it to an economically good conclusion, the first hit's going to be against anybody who lives by tax revenues. And this would happen at the federal level, since states don't levy tariffs against export, foreign countries. They have their own ways of dealing with them. But no, that's. I think that's a terrible idea. It's a good idea, let's say, philosophically, looking back to Adam Smith and hundreds of years of economic history. It'll work for a while if you're needing to protect certain industries from competition, as all our foreign competitors have been doing anyway, and we do it to an extent too. So it's a game everybody plays, but no, I'm not on board for tariffs replacing taxes.
What's going on with gold?
Well, I still like it, but I think it's got to come down a little bit further. We're seeing a correction within a bull market, and one of the more popular vehicles among my subscribers is a GDXJ, which tracks the junior golds, the exploration companies that essentially find the gold. They get acquired by bigger companies that have the means and the capital to get it out of the ground. So GDXJ is in a nice bull market. It came off a low down around 30 back in February, and it's traded as high as 47. So that's a nice move. It's a 50%er, and we're correcting currently $42. I think it's going to come down to 38 before I'd be in there buying it. And you'll see a corresponding move in physical gold. But I think we're correcting within a bull market, and it's got a bit further to go.
What's going on with crude?
Crude, you thought that they, I refer to the they as a very political they, had the price under control. You know, with the election coming up, they had to keep the price of crude down to essentially damp inflation just a little bit. But lo and behold, whoever supposedly was in control, they're not doing such a great job. And it looks to me like crude is absolutely no chance it's not going to happen. It's going to get to 87 and change, at least, currently trading 82. So if you were feeling like elated when pump prices nearly went below $3 a gallon, and you're at the threshold now where you'd be happy to see them sort of get comfortably below $4 a gallon, they may be headed more toward 5 with crude pushing above the last really important high. That was at, it was back in April at 84 bucks. So I think we're going to take that top out, and it's going to lift the price of gas at the pump, and also to lift the price of everything on the planet, everything that's bought, sold, made, whatever, because rising energy prices are the one size fits all contributor to inflation. Nothing escapes inflation. Nothing escapes rising oil prices.
The Canadian government under Trudeau keeps imposing higher carbon taxes, and now the government has admitted that their so-called financial neutral tax really isn't. It's costing Canadians a lot of money a year.
Well, see, that's the thing. You know, when they levy these carbon taxes, I think there's a pretty good economic rationale for doing it, especially since the companies that pollute have never really been very good about policing their own effluents. But the question is, the only question anybody should ask is, okay, well, what are you doing with the money? And if Canada is using that money for, let's say, any long-term capital or infrastructure improvement project, then more power to them, you know? But you might find out that you know, that Canada uses its carbon tax the same way that Chicago would use it, you know, to pay money that they owe the pension for the police or fire department. So I don't know, but look, that's what you should look into. Like, what are they doing with that money?
Rick, can you tell us again how people can take advantage of your special offer?
Well, I don't mind being taken advantage of, actually. They can go to rickackerman.com, and there's a free trial offer there. Just click on that. You don't even need to leave a credit card number. And when you get there, say hello in the chat room. Don't be switched off by the jargon. You know, we have a little bit of jargon, like we talk about hidden pivots and there's some trading language, but there's not much of it. The whole vocabulary is probably 10 or 15 words, and there are two rooms. One is the coffee house, where the discussion can be about anything, but the trading room is mostly about trading. But I think we've got some of the best traders in the world in that room, and they're very friendly. They're willing to share ideas. They put out real trading ideas in real time. In other words, you can actually do some of these trades that get posted in the room, and we've got enormous depth. We've got like a 1927 Yankees backbench on Bitcoin and mining. We've got some real experts in there. And the discussion is, it's very enlightening. So again, rickackerman.com, and click on free trial. And if you stick with me for a year, if you take a year subscription and you don't make back the cost, I will cheerfully refund it to you.
Rick, thank you so much for being on the show.
Always a pleasure. I really do appreciate the chance to get on and talk to your guys.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
comments made on HowStreet.com Radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.